The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, let's start off with the Reader's Digest thing on travel. It's hard to enjoy yourself or be productive if you're exhausted. These tips will help you nod off in an unfamiliar place. Sleep better at a hotel. Number 1. Book the right room. Choose a room on the upper floor and midway down the hall if you can. That location is your best bet for staying away from noisy areas such as exits, elevators, and vending machines, says Richard Shane, Ph.D., behavioral sleep specialist at New West Physicians in Colorado. And that's good advice. I remember one time I had a room on the second floor. It turns out it right above the nightclub. It was noisy. 2. Make it dark. You might also want to ask for a room with blackout shades. Most hotels have them, but they may be in some rooms and not others, says Shane. That said, window shades usually can't close all the way, no matter how hard you try, says Deborah Kissen, Ph.D., clinical director of Light on Anxiety Treatment Center in Chicago. Her advice, bring a sleep mask in case you need it. Number 3, refrain from napping. Unfortunately, taking a nap could set you up with a restless night. Our brain builds up a drive for sleep, says Kissen. If you nap, you'll have less of that. Number 4. Don't get to bed with a full belly. Try to eat dinner at least 2 hours before you go to bed to give your body a chance to digest. If you go to bed with a full stomach, your digestive system will be active while you're trying to get the rest of your body not to be so active, Shane says. Number 5. Go easy on the booze. No need to be a teetotaler on vacation, but you should be aware that those extra indulgences could mess with your sleep. Alcohol increases the production of adenosine, a chemical that normally helps induce sleep, according to the National Sleep Foundation. But after its rapid release following alcohol consumption, the chemical quickly dissipates, which can cause you to wake up. Stabilize your schedule. Number 6. Regular routines often go by the wayside when you travel. So much of sleep is getting a good rhythm going, and the fun of vacation is that it's unpredictable, Kristen says. But try staying somewhat consistent with your bedtime. If you go to bed at 4 a.m. one night and 8 p.m. the next, your body's rhythm will get out of whack. Number 7. Crank up the AC. Keep your room at a cool temperature, between 65 and 68 degrees Fahrenheit, Shane recommends. When we sleep, our body temperature drops, he says. Consequently, when we stay in a room and our body temperature drops, it eases us into sleep. Number 8. Block out the sound. Does a rattling AC or your noisy neighbor keep you up? Pack a pair of silicone earplugs, says Shane. Silicone warms to your body and shapes to your ear for the best fit. It has a high-rated decibel reduction, says. If you're not a fan of earplugs, download some white noise tracks to your phone. Number 9. Quiet your breathing. Most people, when they think about breathing, think about doing deeply, slowly, or into the abdomen, Shane says. Although phones are adjusting your breath too much and taking effort, which means you're not sleeping. Steady recommends make your breathing quieter, which is easier because it doesn't change the muscle you use. Relax your tongue. Number 10. When people think of relaxation, they think of relaxing the entire body, and that's too much work, Shane says. Just let your tongue be calmer, and that will spread relaxation throughout your body. And life well lived. Lesson 15. Being right will eventually lose its appeal. 35 Lessons I've Learned in 35 Years of Marriage by Winford M. Riley. And it shows a cup with two hands holding two cups, both of them tapping each other, and one of them saying 12,775 days together, and the other one says, but who's counting? And they've got hearts all over them. Like most newlyweds, my husband and I stepped into marriage bright-eyed, optimistic, and flat-out unprepared. But let's hear it for young love. We assumed that our marriage would be a rousing success. Marriage turned out to be far more challenging than we had imagined, yet we just celebrated our 35th anniversary. Despite flaring tempers, pouting, and a mutual tendency to blame, our saving grace will be been that come hell or high water, we both kept 2 feet in. We learned a lot and grew a lot, and as a result of our efforts, we have much to celebrate. Here are some of the lessons we learned the hard way. Don't complain about the cooking when your spouse is the cook. Never start the day off nagging or complaining. Number 3, an unwillingness to quarrel about something doesn't mean you agree with it. Number 4, there's no end to how much you can love someone if you let yourself. Number 5, never decide to get a divorce when you have PMS or the flu or jet lag. Number 6, establish early on whether the question, do these pants make me look fat, is a true yes or no question. Number 7, express gratitude often. Number 8, generosity may be the key to all happiness. Number 9, admit your shortcomings. They're obvious anyway. Number 10, most of your fights are living proof of your immaturity. The sooner you grow up, the happier you'll be. Number 11, in love pales in comparison with love. Number 12, when you think you've tried everything, know that you haven't. Number 13, clean is a relative term. Number 14, give up all hope of being perfectly understood. Number 15, being right will eventually lose its appeal. Number 16, many of the things you fight hard for will turn out not to have been worth the fight. Number 17, your definition of sexy will change over time. Now definition, husband going out in the pouring rain to latch the slamming gate. Number 18, be the first to apologize, really. It's not as painful as it sounds. Number 19, pay more attention to what you're doing to make things go badly, and pay less attention to what your spouse is doing. Number 20, when your spouse's behavior is open to interpretation, ascribe the higher motive. Number 21, it's idiotic to stay up late arguing about being too tired to have sex. Number 22, forget the nonsense about not going to bed angry. Get some sleep. Chances are things will look different in the morning. 23. When people say marriage is hard, believe them. 24. If you're going to complain about something, come to the table with a suggestive alternative. Number 25. Hatred is perfectly normal under the circumstances. Don't freak out about it or take it too seriously. 25. Don't kid yourself into thinking you have all the time in the world. 27. Do not underestimate how irritating your spouse's slightly irritating behaviors will become over time. 28. If you want something, recognize that it's your job to ask for it. Number 29. The louder your spouse yells, the quieter and calmer you need to be. Number 30. Disappointment is inevitable. Life gets a lot easier once you accept this. 31. There are no guarantees. There are no guaranteed divorce-proving moves. All any of us can do is be a husband or a wife our spouse would be foolish to leave. 32. Sometimes you're going to do your unfair share. It's not worth whining about. Number 33. Accept apologies graciously. Number 34. Being happily married is not the same as living happily ever after. Number 35. Marriage will teach you more about yourself than you bargained for. Consider that a gift. Wilfred M. Riley is a Berkeley, California psychotherapist specializing in relationship issues. And then health. A handful of lesser-known checkup tests can provide early clues about your cardiovascular health. These heart tests can save your life. After studying a group of healthy individuals for more than 10 years, researchers at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center discovered that those who scored poorly on 5 simple medical tests were 20 times more likely to develop heart disease than those with good results. The tests are not all standard, so they may not be covered by insurance, but the results will give you a much better and earlier sense of your heart disease risk than the traditional reliance on blood pressure and cholesterol levels. And they can help you change your habits as needed to protect your heart for life. If you smoke, are overweight, have a family history of heart problems, or have any other risk factor, ask your doctor about these tests. Electrocardiogram. A standard 12-lead electrocardiogram, also known as an EKG, is non-invasive, painless, and usually takes only 5 to 10 minutes. It's considered one of the best ways to assess heart disease risk. Your doctor will place 10 small electrodes on your limbs and chest that measure your heart's electrical activity and will detect any abnormal rhythms and patterns that are commonly associated with heart attack, arrhythmia, and other dangerous cardiovascular conditions. A coronary calcium scan. This low-radiation CT scan reveals the amount of calcium buildup in your coronary arteries. When we see calcium in the coronaries, it means that there's some degree of atherosclerosis, sludge in the pipes, which can disrupt blood flow and lead to heart attack or stroke, says Andrew M. Freeman, M.D., Director of Clinical Cardiology at National Jewish Health and co-chair of the American College of Cardiology's Nutrition and Lifestyle Work Group. Blood tests for C-reactive protein. The amount of C-reactive protein, CRP, in your bloodstream rises with increased inflammation in the body, which Dr. Freeman says is an underlying condition of many health problems, including heart disease. If possible, get the high-sensitivity CRP test rather than the standard CRP blood test. It's better able to detect heart-related inflammation. Blood test for NT-PRQ-BNP or BNP. Brain natriuretic peptide is a hormone released by your heart in response to cardiovascular stress. N-terminal probrain natriuretic peptide is a precursor to BNP. As Dr. Freeman explains, a high level of NT-proBNP or BNP in the bloodstream is a red flag that either your heart muscle has stiffened and may not relax well, or that it has weakened and no longer pump efficiently. Often this is a result of a lack of regular physical activity. Officially known as diastolic dysfunction, this condition can be an early predictor of heart failure. High-sensitivity blood test for troponin T. Troponin T is a protein that is released when your heart faces significant stress or gets damaged. A typical troponin test can pick up on the only large quantities of the protein, such as those produced during dire events for your heart, such as running a marathon or suffering a heart attack. However, the new high-sensitivity version, approved in January 2017, can detect much lower levels of troponin T, allowing doctors to begin treating heart damage earlier. News from the world of medicine. Raw flour can carry E. coli. An unwelcome news for cookie dough fans. Flour was recently confirmed as the source of a serious 2016 Escherichia coli outbreak in the United States. Certain strains of the bacterium can be toxic, causing stomach cramps, bloody diarrhea, vomiting, and in extreme cases, kidney failure. Scientists knew E. coli could thrive in undercooked meat, but they were surprised to find the bacteria in dry flour with no visible signs of spoilage. Health authorities now recommend that, to be safe, you wash your hands thoroughly after handling flour and abstain from eating raw or unpasteurized dough. Mouthwash and diabetes. In a recent study of 1,206 non-diabetic overweight individuals, participants who used mouthwash twice or more a day were at greater risk of developing prediabetes or diabetes over the course of 3 years than those who used mouthwash no more than once a day. Mouthwash kills bacteria in the mouth, some of which are needed to form nitric oxide, which helps insulin function properly in your body. Avoid the risk by using mouthwash only a few times a week and by eating nitrate-rich foods such as strawberries, raspberries, spinach, lettuce, and beets. A shot to protect against Lyme disease. A team of doctors at the University of Massachusetts Medical School is developing a new treatment to protect against Lyme disease. The injection, while not a vaccine, delivers an antibody that kills off the disease-causing bacteria transmitted by ticks before they can spread. So far, the test results have been promising. The shot has been 100% effective in preventing Lyme disease in mice. For humans, researchers anticipate that a new shot will be necessary at the beginning of each season and provide 6 or 7 months of protection. Clinical trials for the treatment are expected to start soon. Bipolar depression alleviated by light therapy. Sitting under a 7,000 lux white light, which is more than 2.5 times brighter than football stadium lighting, helps with depressive side of bipolar disorder, suggests research published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. Prior to the study, the 46 subjects were all on stable doses of anti-manic medication, which banished their manic symptoms, but they still suffered from moderate depression. After 6 weeks, 68% of the subjects receiving the bright light therapy saw remission compared with just 22% of the subjects who were exposed to a 50 lux dim red placebo light. The time of day makes a difference when it comes to light therapy, and the research suggests trying it at noon or in the early afternoon. A faster test for the right antibiotics. Researchers have developed a new technique that can determine in 30 minutes instead of days, the current standard, what type of antibiotic will be most effective in treating a urinary tract infection. According to the study published in Science Translational Medicine, taking a genetic blueprint of urine bacteria quickly determines whether UTI is resistant or susceptible to two common antibiotics. Rheumatoid arthritis raises risk of COPD. By comparing more than 24,000 people who suffered from rheumatoid arthritis with people who don't, Canadian researchers discovered that having RA increases the likelihood of developing chronic obstructive pulmonary disease by 47%. That's because inflammation plays a role in COP development. The scientists recommended that RA patients use anti-inflammatory medications, address COPD risk factors such as smoking, and watch for lung symptoms such as wheezing to catch COPD early. Get more of this key nutrient for brain health. In a study of 60 people between the ages of 25 and 45, researchers found that older participants with higher levels of lutein scored just as well as their younger counterparts on exercises designed to test how well they concentrate on a given task. Lutein is a substance in leafy green vegetables such as cooked kale and spinach, and in egg yolks and avocados. How about a little humor? All in a day's work. It was my first night caring for an elderly patient. When he grew sleepy, I wheeled his chair as close to the bed as possible, and using the techniques I'd learned in school, grasped him in a bear hug to lift him from the bed. But I couldn't clear the top of the mattress, so I grabbed him again, summoned all of my might, and hoisted him onto the bed. When the night shift nurse arrived, I recounted what had happened. Funny, she said, looking puzzled. Usually I just ask him to get in bed, and he does. Erin Dockery. Obviously, she was a young, attractive female. He wasn't going to pass that up. To resolve work conflicts between management and staff, I brought both sides together and asked employees to jot down keywords on a flip chart. One participant complained about management's tendency to interfere and wrote the word nitpicking. A manager leaped to his feet and asked, "Shouldn't there be a hyphen between nit and picking?" You know you've been working too hard when you suffer these brain blips. One day the phone rang at work while I was super busy. I was halfway between saying, "Can you hold?" and "Can I place you on hold?" But a second I just said, "Can I hold you?" I went to Wendy's and the girl behind the counter said, "Welcome to McDonald's," and then just sighed. A customer asked me whether I was Rachel. I responded with, "Yes, this is Rachel." It was not a phone call. He was standing right in front of me. I was dining with the actor Ben Chapman, who had starred in a horror film in the 1950s. Benny got a little drunk and loud and ended up getting kicked out by the Mater D. "Sir," I said, "if you know who we are ejecting, this is the creature from the Black Lagoon." The Mater D snarled, "I don't care where he's from. He's got to leave." And here we go with the main thing that the editor mentioned before in the beginning of the article, the beginning of the magazine. You can quickly master these yourself, even if you're not very handy. They're all smallish jobs that can fend off big problems later. Ford or home repairs that anyone can do. Your home is your castle. But unlike an actual castle, it probably doesn't come with a staff, which means that keeping it in good repair is on you. We ask our friends at our sister publication, The Family Handyman, for a list of projects you can do yourself, even if you never call yourself a do-it-yourselfer. These small casts won't take much time, in some cases just a few minutes, or cost too much money, and taking them now can prevent big headaches and big bills down the road. Throughout the house. Very hard printing here to read. Apologize for that. Test your thermostat. Risk. If the temperature in your house, even when it shows on a thermostat, your air conditioner or furnace could be working too hard. How to do it yourself it. Every spring and fall, tape a household thermometer on the wall next to the thermostat. After about 15 minutes, compare readings. If the difference between the two numbers is more than a few degrees, try recalibrating your thermostat. Follow the manufacturer's instructions. While you're at it, If you don't have a programmable thermostat, consider getting one. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, an Energy Star rated model can save you $100 on heating and cooling costs each year. You can buy one for about $40 and install it yourself. It's a relatively easy job, no rewiring required. Stop air leaks under doors. Risk. Cooling or heating the world outside your home is obviously wasteful and expensive. How to do it yourself it. Most door thresholds, also called saddles, below, adjust up and down with screws. Turn all the screws equally until the door opens and closes without much drag, and the draft is diminished. While you're at it, you can seal drafting windows with removable caulk, which will keep cold air outside in winter and easy peel off come spring when you want to open the windows. Patch a hole in drywall. Risk. Holes happen, but you don't have to pay a pro $100 or more to patch them. The easiest way to do it yourself is with an adhesive aluminum patch, some joint compound, figure to spackle, and a taping knife, all sold at paint and hardware stores for just a few dollars. How to do it? Clean up any rough edges around the hole, then stick the patch to the wall over the hole. Using the taping knife, spread a layer of joint compound over it and let it dry overnight. Then spread a wider second coat, feathering out the compound on all sides to make the patches blend in. Let it dry, then apply one or more coat extending 8 to 12 inches beyond the patch in all directions. After the final coat dries in the area with a sanding sponge, a foam block wrapped in sandpaper, until it feels smooth and even, prime, and then paint. While you're at it, you can use joint compound to fill nail holes, too. After filling the holes, apply a second coat and scrape the excess so the area is flush with the wall, then prime and paint. Protect your electronics. Risk. Power surges, caused by lightning, an unstable power grid, or heavy power use from energy hog appliances such as your refrigerator or furnace, can fry your electronics. That includes anything with a digital display, your computer, TV, microwave, smart fridge, etc. How to do it yourself it. Buy a surge suppressor at a home improvement store for $20 or so apiece, then plug each of your gadgets into one. While you're at it, consider a whole house surge suppressor, which protects all your devices from external surges. You need an electrician to install it. Expect to pay $400 to $600 for the job. Repair carpet snags. If you have a carpet with woven loops, loose fibers can easily unravel into even bigger snags. This quick fix is far cheaper than replacing carpeting, which will run you about $40 per square foot on average. How to do it yourself it. Gently tug the loose parts of the carpet to find the point where it's still attached. Snip it off as close to the backing as possible and save it. Use painter's tape to surround the repair area. Squeeze a heavy head of carpet seam sealer, about $6 at home centers, into the run. Then fill the hole with saved fiber, using a screwdriver to press it into the sealer, bit by bit until the area looks like the surrounding carpet. While you're at it, vacuum high traffic areas at least once a week. This may sound like a no-brainer, but fabric experts stress that because dirt is abrasive, walking on dirty carpet, even if it looks clean, damages the fibers, making it stain more easily and wear out faster. Oops, when it hits the fan. While I was painting my living room one summer day, my dog, Hobbs, was looking for relief from the heat. Spotting the box fan I had set up to dry the paint, he lay down in front of it to grab some shut-eye. As I was finishing the second coat, I stepped down off my ladder and right onto the back of my roller pan. It flew up, hit the back of the fan, and sprayed paint all over the room, especially on Hobbs, who slowly lifted his head, looked at his paint-colored body, stretched, and went back to sleep. The kitchen. Unclog refrigerator coils. Risk. When coils are clogged with dust, pet hair, and cobwebs, they can't efficiently release heat. This makes your refrigerator compressor work harder and longer than necessary, using more energy and shortening its life. How to do it yourself it. Coils are located on the back of the refrigerator across the bottom. Pull the fridge away from the wall, and grab the sides and pull from the bottom. You may want to lay cardboard on the floor first to prevent scratching. Clean coils with a coil cleansing brush, about $10 at home centers, then vacuum. Do this every 6 months or so. While you're at it, wipe down the rubber gaskets that line the inside edges of your refrigerator and freezer doors, as a poor seal can also make your appliance less efficient. Use warm water and a sponge, no detergents, which can do damage. Freshen up the dishwasher. Risk. If yours isn't doing its job, you'll waste water by having to wash dishes again by hand or in another run through the machine. How to do it yourself? A simple cleaning often solves the problem. Start by pulling the lower dish rack, remove the spray arm, and use a thin piece of wire to clean out the holes where the water sprays through. Scoop or vacuum out any leftover food particles from the filter area, then remove the filter screen, if possible, and give it a good rinse. While you're at it, if your dishwasher smells, cleaning the filter should help. Also, wipe the door with spray cleaner. Then throw in a bottle of dishwasher cleaner, about $5, and run the machine empty. Decrease range hood filters. Risk. The range hood sucks cooking fumes up and out of the kitchen. As grease splatters, it builds up and clogs the filter on the underside of the hood, keeping the fan from working as it should. This causes your smoke alarm to go off, attract fruit flies, and leave potentially harmful pollutants from your gas or electric range lingering in the air. And if you have to replace the motor, it will cost around $200. How to do it yourself? Once a month or so, pop out the filter and run it through the dishwasher. You can also place it in a sink full of hot water, dishwashing liquid, and baking soda, and let it soak for 10 to 15 minutes. Scrub any remaining grease off with a brush, then rinse and dry the filter before putting it back. While you're at it, wipe down the fan blades and the rest of the hood with all-purpose cleaner. Clean your garbage disposal blades. Gunked up, greasy blades won't chop up scratch the way they're supposed to, potentially causing backups and bad smells. How to do it yourself? Once a month, toss a bunch of ice cubes into the disposal. They'll make a racket, but the ice does a good job of cleaning the blades. Follow with a few lemon or orange peels, then run cold water down the disposal. While you're at it, scrub the rubber splash guard, top and bottom, using an old toothbrush into an antibacterial grease-cutting kitchen cleaner. Oops, if at first you don't. Our washing machine was on the fritz. It's part of a heavily stacked unit that's tucked into a tight hallway wall recess. After 45 minutes of pulling out and straining, I pulled it out. The problem? A broken clutch. It's what houses and turns the agitator. It was too late to get the part, and the unit was blocking the way to the kitchen, so I pushed it back into place. The next day, I repeated the back-breaking process and repaired the clutch. But when I started it up, water came gushing from underneath. I'd forgotten to reattach the drain hose, so I pulled the unit out again and reattached it. The next day, my wife discovered hot water coming out during the cold cycle. I switched the hot and cold hoses when I reattached them, which I had to go and do it again. Bathroom. Unplug a faucet. Risk. If the flow from your faucet isn't what it used to be, the holes in the aerator are probably plugged with mineral buildup. How to do it yourself? Close the drain stopper so small parts can't fall in. Wrap duct or electrical tape around pliers to avoid scratching the aerator, then unscrew it. Scrub it with a toothbrush and rinse. If there's still residue, soak the aerator part in vinegar. While you're at it, clean your shower head the same way. Or try this. Fill a freezer bag with half and half mixture of vinegar and water. Secure the bag over the shower head with a rubber band or duct tape. Remove it every 15 minutes and check the flow. Don't leave it longer than necessary, as vinegar can damage finishes. Fix a loose towel bar. Risk. Pulling the bar out of the wall can make a mess and perhaps bring you down with it. How to do it yourself? Take off the loose bar by removing the screws on each of the posts that mount in the bar to the wall. If one side is solidly attached, leave it alone. With the mounting plate now exposed, try tightening the screws in it. If that doesn't work, remove it. Chances are you'll find two plastic anchors underneath. Poke them with a screwdriver and let them fall inside the wall. Replace with bigger, stronger metal toggle anchors sold at hardware stores. Just drive them into existing holes with a drill or a screwdriver and then reattach everything. While you're at it, follow the same steps to fix loose hooks and toilet paper holders. These small jobs each cost $100 or more if you hired a handyman to do them. Install a low-flow shower head. Risk. If your house was built before 1994 and still has the original plumbing fixtures, you're using 30 to 40% water than a comparable new home, because about 70% of the water flowing through the shower head is hot. That means higher heating bills, too. A basic shower head can cost just $15 and can pay for itself in reduced water and heating after just 1 month. Calculate your savings at epa.gov/watersense/watersense-calculator. How to do it yourself it. Simply unscrew the old shower head and screw on the new one. Read the directions and see whether it requires a layer of plumber's tape to prevent leaks. While you're at it, look for WaterSense logo, which means the shower head uses at least 20% less water and still performs as well as a better than other products in that category. Speed up a slow drain. Clogs only get risk over time, and a slow drain can turn into a stop-up sink or tub and a $100-plus visit from the plumber. How to do it yourself? There are lots of ways to clear a drain, so start with the easiest one. If your sink has a pop-up stopper, remove that and clean it. If that doesn't do the trick, fill the sink with 3 or 4 inches of water and use a plunger to plunge the sink. Plug the overflow hole with a wet rag first. Still slow? Try snaking the drain pipe with a metal hanger or a pipe cleaning tool, sold at hardware stores for about $2. While you're at it, mix together 1 cup baking soda, 1 cup salt, and 1/4 cup cream of tartar. Store in an airtight, childproof container to keep your drains clog-free. Pour 1/2 cup of this mixture down each drain every few weeks, followed by 1/4 boiling water. Oops, sinking feeling. My bathroom sink stopped up. To unclog it, I removed the trap, catching all the scummy, soapy, toothpaste, gobbery, hairy water in a bucket. I lay down on the bathroom floor so I could look up and make sure that the gunk was out of the drain. My 4-year-old son wanted to help, so I handed the bucket of water to him and asked him to get rid of it. He helped me by pouring it down the sink, right into my face. The basement. Clean your dryer vent. Risk. Lint buildup near your closed dryer's motor and heat source, gas burner, or electric element can ignite, causing a fire that could spread to the rest of your house. Besides, a clogged dryer makes it longer to dry clothes. How to do it yourself it. You should already be emptying the lint trap before every load of laundry. Do a thorough cleaning of the dryer and its vent duct system. Unplug the machine and turn the gas valve if it has one. Pry off the access panel on the front. Try a putty knife covered with a duct tape to prevent scratching. And vacuum around the motor and heating element. Then carefully disconnect the vent duct tubing from the back of the dryer and use a dryer vent brush, about $10 at home centers. Look for one that also cleans refrigerator coils and pull out any accumulated lint. Aim to do this at least once a year. While you're at it, vacuum behind the dryer regularly and take the lint filter out every so often and run it under the faucet. If the water doesn't run through, use a stiff brush to scrub the filter with hot water and a little laundry detergent. Test your sump pump. Rinse your risk. Your basement could flood. Most homeowners don't discover that when their pump is broken until they need it and it fails. How to do it yourself it. Remove the basin cover and dump in a few buckets of water. If the pump doesn't run or eject the water, you've got trouble that will require professional help. While you're at it, for less than $20, you can get a battery-powered alarm that goes off if water reaches the top of the basin. And that helps only if you're home. So consider spending more, about $100, for a system that contacts you if the pump fails. Scoop out your water softener tank. Water softener salt contains some impurities that can accumulate in the bottom of the brine tank, clogging it and shortening the life of your system. Wait until the salt level is low and scoop out any gunk with an old plastic container. Once a year is often enough. While you're at it, don't cheap out and use rock salt instead of water softener salt, even though rock salt costs half as much. It contains far more impurities that will clog up the works, and you could wind up spending $600 or more for a new water softener. Shut off the water before you go on vacation. Every insurer has stories like this one. The homeowners left town Friday and returned Sunday evening to find a burst pipe, an overflowing toilet, or another plumbing fiasco. How to do it yourself it? Simply turn off the main water valve, usually located in the basement. While you're at it, any appliance that uses water has a shut-off valve, but when the valves go untouched for years, mineral deposits can make them impossible to close. Before that happens, locate the valve for your washer, ice maker, water heater, etc., and turn the handle clockwise about 1/4 turn every year or so, more often than if your water is very hard, then turn it back. Oops, tidal wave. While folding laundry one rainy Saturday, I noticed water seeping from a basement window. Figuring it wasn't shut properly, I got a rag and started to open the window to wipe down the seal. What I didn't realize was that the window well was full of water. When I turned the latch, I was hit in a tidal wave. I went upstairs to change and told my wife the laundry was still a little damp. Outside. Clear window weep holes. If these holes found in the bottom of exterior frame of many sliding windows and vinyl replacement windows get clogged with bugs or debris, they can't do their job of draining a lake collected rainwater. How to do it yourself it? Pour water into the track and spray the outside of the windows with a hose. If you don't see a steady stream of clean water exiting the weep hole, poke a wire hanger into the hole or spray it with compressed air. Keep testing and cleaning out the hole until the water runs through. While you're at it, check the basement window wells for any collected water, leaves, or other debris, and clean them out or protect them with window covers around $10 at home centers. Hose down your central air conditioning unit. Risk. The outside unit for your central air conditioner is basically a frown surrounded by a wall of tubing and tiny fine fins. If those fins are plugged with dirt or debris, air can't flow through properly. A neglected air conditioner uses 10 to 30% more energy. How to do it yourself it? Turn it off by opening the disconnect box, typically located on the outside wall near the unit, and pulling out the disconnect block inside. Now take a good look at the unit. The vents are caked with fuzz from dandelions and cottonwood trees. Vacuum the vents, then rinse the unit with a hose using moderate pressure. The flimsy fins might bend under strong pressure. As you spray, peer down into the unit. You should see water streaming through. If not, the fins are still clogged, so keep rinsing. While you're at it, change air conditioning filters monthly during warm weather. Ditto for furnace filters during colder months. Depending on what type you have, check recommendations in your owner's manual. Lube your garage door springs. Risk. All springs will eventually break because of metal fatigue and or corrosion, but lubricating them at least twice a year will make them last longer. A new spring costs $125 or so. How to do it yourself? This job can be messy, so protect nearby zippers by covering them with plastic or cardboard. Spray the springs with garage door lubricant, about $7 at home centers. Don't use oil, grease, or other lubricants. They may be cheaper, or you may have them on hand already, but they won't work as well and tend to pick up dust and grit, just what you don't want on moving parts. And while you're at it, spray the rollers and track too. Blown away. Oops. When my new and very attractive neighbor complained that her outdoor faucet was leaking, I saw an opportunity to impress her and promised to have it fixed in 10 minutes. Trouble is, I forgot to turn off the water. A cold blast knocked me flat on my back in a mud puddle. My neighbor was less impressed than I had hoped. The Handyman Toolbox. For more do-it-yourself assistance and inspiration from the Family Handyman, visit FamilyHandyman.com, where you'll find more easy fixes, home improvement ideas, and practical advice and tips. Take free online course, 10 Things Every Homeowner Must Know, and others at doityourselfuniversity.com. That's DIYuniversity.com. Get a subscription to the Family Handyman magazine at familyhandyman.com/save. And buy the book, 100 Things Every Homeowner Must Know, with additional information on those projects and more at thereadersdigeststore.com/100things. And with that, we'll swish back to the Consumer Reports. And last week we were talking about your car sensors and what they collect and the information about it and who gets to do it. And we left off with the rule of the Trump administration is waiting to make a ruling as to whether or not the speed, location, and direction information should be broadcast to the car manufacturers. So the question is, who should own the data? Much of the information coming from connected cars can produce safety benefits, but it has value for other purposes as well. There are more than 200 data points in cars today, with at least 140 variable business uses, and only about 15% are making money, says Niranjan Manohar, an automotive technology specialist at market research and consulting firm Frost & Sullivan. It's easy to foresee business uses for location, driver behavior, and vehicle use data, such as location-based promotions, ride-sharing, and insurance, he says. Certain automakers are launching in-car marketing programs already. In late 2017, GM introduced a marketplace program, an in-car app that allows drivers to order and pay for items such as coffee and gas directly from their car. Companies such as Mobileye say that collect data from vehicles in the field, say they scrub personal information and make it anonymous. But privacy advocates say data anonymity promises are particularly tricky to verify. It's a fraught process, says Jeremy Galula, senior staff technologist at the Electronics Frontier Foundation. I distrust anyone who says they are successfully anonymizing or disidentifying data until they explicitly say how they are doing it. One of the companies hoping to get in on the car data business is Otonomo. That's O-T-O-N-O-M-O. The startup, based in Israel, is working to create a connected car marketplace by translating data from various car brands into a common language so that it can be used by third parties. A Mini puts out a very different data than a Porsche or a BMW, says Lisa Joy Rosner, Otonomo's chief marketing officer. Otonomo claims it will anonymize some of the data, although certain use cases need name data, which could identify the driver, Rosner says. Those require an opt-in. Your privacy is at stake. So far, neither Congress nor the Department of Transportation has instituted any new legal requirements for most car data. Many car companies say they are being proactive about consumer privacy, but advocates are concerned about the prospect of an industry policing itself. In 2014, the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers and the Association of Global Automakers issued voluntary guidelines that almost every company selling cars in the U.S. has agreed to. Generally, the automakers promise to provide clear notice about what kind of data is collected and who is receiving it under industry principles. Consumers can review historical data from subscription services and certain information about car performance, maintenance, and driver behavior. But privacy advocates say the guidelines aren't specific enough about how and when car companies need to disclose their practices to consumers. Consumers shouldn't have to read every detail of a complicated contract when they're being pressured to complete a sale, or to dig through their 500-page owner's manual, or search the web for privacy information they don't even know may be there, says David Friedman, Director of Cars and Product Policy and Analysis at Consumer Unions. It's unfair to expect consumers to constantly play defense. And owners may be surprised to find out that the manufacturer of their car can access much of the information that comes from their vehicle and can sometimes make it public. Tesla, for instance, has publicly released data from owner cars on numerous occasions. Recently it did so after the fatal crash of a Model X in California last March. A week after the crash, Tesla said on its website that Autopilot, the company's controversial driver assistant, was engaged during the crash, but that the driver did not heed multiple warnings to take the wheel. Tesla did not comment specifically about this crash to us, but it has told Consumer Reports that it does not proactively disclose logs from customers' onboard computer to the media or regulators. But in certain cases, when customers or others provide information that the company sees as materially incorrect or omitting key facts, Tesla believes it has a responsibility to correct the record. Tesla owners may be used to the idea that the company has instant access to their driving data, says Brookman of Consumers Union, but that might be an unsettling revelation to other drivers. If you're thought of as a spyware car company, don't think that's going to be good for business, he says. Where do we stand? Data collection done right. Consumers Union, the advocate division of Consumer Reports, believe Congress should pass legislation to give consumers strong legal privacy rights. In the meantime, Consumers Union urges automakers to follow these basic principles to protect drivers. Limit data collection and retention to what's reasonably necessary to operate the vehicle or deliver features the consumer is using. Smart sensors and remote connectivity can make a car safer and help get drivers where they need to go. But wholesale collection of driving habits for marketing or undefined research is excessive. Provide access to detailed information about data collection practices. Vague statements that grant broad permission to manufacturers are unfair to consumers and do not help them make informed choices. Give drivers control over the data collected by their vehicle. Consumers should have the ability to turn off unwanted data collection. They should also have the right to repair or modify their vehicle without involving the manufacturer. Before collecting sensitive information, such as audio or video from in-car microphones and cameras or precise geolocation, companies must get the driver's informed permission. Provide consumers access to a complete file of all the information that has been collected from their vehicle so that drivers can understand how their car is gathering and transmitting data. Give outside researchers access to test claims that consumer data is properly anonymized or aggregated to ensure that these statements are legitimate. And what exactly are your car sensor collecting? Electronic toll collector. Systems such as EasyPass allow seamless wireless toll payment, but these transponders are also generating a record of your movements through toll barriers that can be accessed by law enforcement. A driver-facing camera. Certain cars with advanced driver assist systems aim a camera at the driver to make sure he or she is paying attention. They track head position and detect distraction or drowsiness. If you're nodded off, you get an alert. Onboard diagnostic port. Known as the OBD, this port lets mechanics diagnose what's going wrong with the check engine light is on. States use it to make sure emissions equipment is working properly. Insurance companies also offer discounts to drivers who plug remote monitor devices into this port. The devices send driving data back to the insurer. Most cars now have several processors governing functions such as engine timing and anti-lock brakes. These processes feed into an exchange that allows them to communicate with each other. Concert J Telematic Services. Services such as GM's OnStar and Hyundai BlueLake use a cellular connection to provide directions, Concert J services, diagnostic, and emergency assistance. Infotainment systems. The infotainment system screen is valuable real estate for automakers and their partners. GM has already rolled out Marketplace, a new way for its customers to find the nearest gas station or order coffee from their cars. Many modern cars can sync with the driver's smartphone and upload the contact list as well as information from the phone onto the onboard computer. Mine can do that. That can be a risk with a shared car or rental vehicle. Telematics modem. Your car company may be receiving a regular data feed from your car's computer, containing the same sort of information you might get from the EDR or OBD2 port. Event data recorder. This built-in computer records a constant loop of data about driver input such as steering, acceleration, and braking. Investigators can access the EDR to learn about the final seconds before a crash. Obstacle detection. Cameras and radar help cars see the roadway. They enable a safety system such as automatic emergency braking and forward collision warning. Certain companies are sending the data gathered by these sensors back to manufacturers to make detailed maps of roadways for self-driving cars. V2V transponder. In 2016, the federal government proposed a rule to require that car companies install radio transmitters and receivers that allow cars to talk to each other directly. These vehicle-to-vehicle devices would send data on speed, braking, and location to help improve safety. The rule is stalled, but is still under consideration by the Trump administration. And the GPS. According to a CR analysis, 40% of vehicles sold in 2017 were equipped with GPS that could be tracked via data connection. Location data can be used for navigation, but is also valuable information for marketeers and law enforcement. And let's move to a new subject. Is smartphone insurance worth buying? Phones are now pricey enough to ask the question, but coverage cost and plan parameters vary widely. Here are guards to making a smart decision. It can happen in an instant. You're walking down the street and decide to make a call. A passing pedestrian bumps your arm and your smartphone slips in your hand. You watch helplessly as it tumbles, as in slow motion, toward the hard concrete. You brace for the crash and pray you get lucky. Not this time. As your touchscreen becomes a spider web of cracks. Try to recall if you bought insurance or an extended care plan. If you're not covered in some way, the cost to fix a cracked screen, the most common repair, is $277 on average. For a Samsung S8, according to AGI Repair, a company that provides wireless device repair parts to businesses. If your power button goes kaput, it could cost over $90. And if your phone can't be fixed, or if it's lost or stolen, you've got to buy a new one. And that could check you back $840 to $1,140 for a top-of-the-line Galaxy X9 or an iPhone X. With numbers like that, insuring your smartphone with repair or replacement might seem like a good idea, especially when premiums can be as low as $7 to $36 a month. But while it sounds great, it's not that simple. For each claim you file, you'll pay a deductible that could run anywhere from $29 to $225. Most insurance companies limit the number of claims you can file to 2 or 3 a year, and your insurer might send you a refurbished phone rather than a new model if a replacement phone is what you need. In many cases, you have to make the decision whether to insure quickly, because some plans are available only for 2 to 4 weeks after you buy a smartphone. Cell phone insurance is really confusing, says Logan Abbott, president of Wirefly, a website that compares cell phone plans. Some carriers offer three or four plans with different levels of coverage, deductibles, and limits. It's hard for people to know when it's worth paying $15 a month for a plan, and if so, what it should cover. Driver repair plates are easy. To break liquid crystal displays and touchscreens, very thin covers, according to December 2017 report by the market research company IBS World. Some newer phones are also costlier than ever to fix because they have a glass back or curved glass front. Your smartphone tends to travel with you everywhere, exposing it to all sorts of potential problems. In a 2016 Consumer Reports survey about smartphone mishaps, a respondent reported accidentally drowning his phone in a washing machine. I've done that, actually. Another ran over, one ran over with a car. By the way, that was a $225 mistake. Then there was the phone that a pit bull used as a chew toy. According to the survey, which involved more than 5,200 people with at least one smartphone in their household, about 50% of the respondents reported at least one major smartphone fiasco during the previous 24 months. 10% had three or four incidents, and a special lucky 9% had five or more. So given those odds and the cost, how do you decide whether some sort of insurance or extended warranty plan is right for you? Here are three things to think about. What are your options? You have lots of choices to wade through. All programs have a bunch of limitations and restrictions, so you need to read the terms and conditions carefully. Manufacturers' plans. Apple and Samsung are the two largest phone manufacturers to sell their own coverage. AppleCare Plus. Every iPhone comes with a standard one-year warranty from Apple and 90 days of tech support. Add an AppleCare Plus, which you must purchase within 60 days of buying your smartphone, extends the warranty for hardware and covers accident damage for up to 2 years from the iPhone 8 Plus, iPhone 7 Plus, and iPhone 6 Plus for $149. An iPhone X costs $199. For the fee, Apple covers up to 2 instances of damage, such as a cracked screen, and adds another year of protection for mechanical failures. The plans don't cover loss or theft. You have to pay a $29 deductible to fix screen damage and $99 for other types of damage, plus tax. Repairs can be done in an Apple store, at an authorized dealer, or by mail. Samsung Premium Care. This covers the latest Samsung smartphones, including the Galaxy S8, Galaxy 8, Galaxy Note 8, Galaxy S9, or Galaxy S9 Plus for $11.99 a month. You can sign up at the time of purchase for the S9 family of phones and any time for the other phones. You can cancel any time. Samsung Premium Care extends the phone's original one-year warranty for as long as you pay for the policy and covers accidental damage including drops, liquid spills, and cracked screens. You'll pay a $99 deductible for a repair. You can get up to 3 replacements each year for each smartphone you insure. Premium Care doesn't protect your smartphone if it's lost or stolen. You can buy Apple Care Plus or Samsung Premium Care extended warranty coverage from the manufacturers, but most cell phone carriers also offer insurance products that cover loss and theft. The plans are generally in effect as long as you keep paying the monthly fee. AT&T and Sprint and Verizon sell coverage provided by the insurance company Acherion. T-Mobile's plan is run by Assurant. You can find more details later in another chart, which I'll show you. AT&T offers 3 plans. The top tier, the Multi-Protection Pack, costs $34.99 and covers 3 devices. The Noble Protection Pass costs $11.99 per month per phone. Both cover device malfunctions, loss, theft, and damage, as well as tech support. If you don't care about tech support, add an $8.99 plan offers the same protection. Sprint offers various insurance plans based on your device. More expensive phones, not surprisingly, cost more to insure and incur higher deductibles. For example, the Samsung Galaxy S4, Mini, and an LG Viper are in the group that cost the least. It's $9 a month. The Apple iPhone 8 and Samsung phones cost $13 a month. An iPhone X is $17. The plan covers device malfunction, damage, lost, and theft. T-Mobile provides 3 levels of coverage. The least expensive plan costs $7 to $10 a month, depending on your device, includes protection against malfunctions, damage, loss, and theft. T-Mobile Mobile also offers an enhanced protection package for $9 to $12 per month that includes the Lookout Mobile Security Premium, a plan for $12 to $15 per month that adds tech support. If you already rode in T-Mobile's Jump program, $9 to $12 a month, which lets you upgrade your phone once you've paid off 50% of its cost, a premium level of insurance is included if your phone is lost or stolen. Verizon also has three insurance plans. Its wireless phone protection plan covers defects as well as lost or stolen smartphones for $6.75 a month. $3 for basic phones. You can get up to three replacement phones each year. Verizon's most expensive coverage, Total Mobile Protection, has tech support for a smartphone for $13 a month, $10 for basic phones, or you can pay $39 a month for three phones and share up to nine replacements a year. Independent operators. Some insurers provide cell phone coverage directly to consumers. One of the largest, SquareTrade, offers a one-year plan for $89, a two-year plan for $129, or $159 for three. All claims are subject to a $99 deductible, except for select mobile screen repairs in select markets that have an in-home repair option with a $25 deductible. The company covers only damage, not loss or theft. In the event your phone is damaged beyond repair, SquareTrade will pay you the value of the phone or provide a replacement. Well, there's a fair amount of more information with this, but we're not going to have time to finish it today. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and close out with a little bit of quotable quotes from the Reader's Digest. I wish I had a treasure, the doing a little more, and the getting it done a little less, Anna Quinlan. I've been very lucky in my life in terms of people who are able to tolerate me, Patton Oswalt, a comedian. You can't move mountains by whispering at them, Pink. It is the greatest of all mistakes to do nothing because you can only do little, Sidney Smith, an English punk preacher. Nothing in life is so exhilarating as to be shot out without result, Winston Churchill, and I've used that quote for years. Art isn't your pet, it's your kid. It grows up and talks back to you, Josh Whedon. And with that, we have just about run out of time. So, for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest Consumer Reports, be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the reading service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.